Welcome to the Student Loan Planner Podcast. This is Travis Hornsby, and I have to say, I am really tired because I am back from paternity leave, and whatever they tell you about the work it takes to raise a child, you know, if you don't have one yet, I think triple it. But I'm really excited because today's episode 100 of the Student Loan Planner Podcast, and to celebrate, I've got the entire crew joining us today. So I just want each one of you give us a shout out. Tell us how you've been doing since I've been on paternity leave. Megan, you wanna go first?
I'm so glad you're back. I did one of the email blasts, and it was on like the Heroes Act 2.0. And I was like, man, I would really like to talk to Travis about this stuff. So I missed you a lot for those like technical conversations, but glad you're back.
Lauren, Justin, and Rob, do you guys have the same opinion, or are you like, oh, shoot?
No, we're all happy to see you,
Trav. I'm definitely glad to have you back.
Yeah, well, me too. And I could have told you about the kid stuff. It is three times harder than you think.
Yeah. Well, just tell me the address. It's in the Amazon gift card too. Appreciate the positivity. I'll say that one thing that I think is diaper quality is hugely divergent. That's one thing that I feel like I've learned in the first month or two. Okay, we don't get any podcast revenue from advertising from diaper brands. Just want to say that out loud. But
not yet. But
Pampers all the way. Okay. Target brand, in my opinion, total junk. Had so many blowouts. I've got poop all over myself so many times from baby, you know, having some real disasters.
You know what, though? Fit depends on the kid, though, because, you know, we had to go. I wish they would send you like a sample pack of all the major brands and some of the eco-friendly versions, too. That's and then you brilliant. Could try and see what fits your baby best and then go with that. We had to try like five or six of them before one worked.
I have to admit, I don't know if Pampers are like more ecologically or less ecologically friendly, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that I would pay to plant a small rainforest if Pampers are like bad for the environment right now. Cause I'm just like, you know what? When it's 2 a.m., I don't care about the environment. I just care about not getting covered in baby doo doo. Okay. I really apologize, you know, to folks out there. Again, tell me where to send the check to grow the rainforest, to reduce the emissions, whatever. But man, but my sense of humor is even worse because lack of sleep.
And now you got dad jokes now, not just regular jokes, but dad jokes.
Oh, dad jokes for days. I was a dad joke guy before even being one. So I will say this, probably because of my lack of sleep, I can't figure out how to add more than four people in our podcast recording room for this next part of the podcast. Lauren specifically requested not to have to talk about anything political, right, Lauren? So we're going to talk a little election preview for everyone. I think it'll be pretty fun, but before we get to this next part, Lauren, do you have any tips for us for this third rail we're going to discuss here?
Don't pick a side. The world is divisive enough. All the craziness that's going on. Don't pick a side, guys. There are no sides. We are all American. That's my tip. That's all I got for you as it pertains to
USA.
That's right. Right, you know,
as a member of Team USA, I can definitely say. Like,
I'm just going to say, though, again, when it comes to diapers, I'm hyper-partisan, y'all. All right, so there's no other way I can deal with it.
Before I head out, I just want to say, Trav, I am so appreciative for working at Student Loan Planner. You have given us a really good opportunity while you were out on paternity leave to know what happens behind the scenes. And so your ability to be able to create content, to be able to keep the ball rolling, to, you know, research all over here, there, and everywhere, all things student loan planning, I really, really appreciate the work that you do. And I have an even higher level of respect for you in addition to the work that I've been able to do by picking your brain. So you guys have fun.
It's kind of crazy we hit this milestone. I thought it would be a great time with a milestone episode to talk about what we expect is going to change because of the election with your student loans, regardless of what happens. So to kick things off, I'll just give a little bit of background of just some of the things I've been thinking about during my paternity leave in between the diaper changes. You know, it kind of seems like the probabilities are very much skewed towards a Biden administration happening, right? So Nate Silver, 538, some of these other kind of Real Clear Politics polling averages, a lot of different places kind of put the odds for Biden like 8 or 9 and 10. And then for the Senate being Democrat, that's more of like a 7 in 10 kind of chance, according to 538. So it seems like it's very likely that we're going to have a Democratic White House and a democratically controlled Congress. But there's obviously the possibility that it would be Biden with a Republican Senate, or a 1 in 10 kind of a chance of a Trump administration with the Republican Senate makeup that we have now. So to discuss these different situations, let's start with Rob. I'll pick on you first. So let's say we have a blue wave, right? Let's say we have the Democrats winning, you know, in Montana, all the Arizona, Colorado, North Carolina kind of situations, Maine, maybe one or two of the Georgia seats. So like, and we have like 55, 56 seats in the Senate. What are your thoughts with student loans if we have a complete sweep in November?
Right. Well, the Biden plan is definitely a lot more accommodative than any other plan out there, with being 5% of income versus pay and repay, and with the loan forgiveness and PSLF could get even better. So if that happens, you know, I'm not saying that's going to be maybe their first priority out of the get-go, but over the next 2 years, we probably could see some sort of student loan reform, maybe with some forgiveness, lower payments. You know, we'll have to wait and see, I guess, right?
Yeah. What do you guys think, Megan and Justin?
The one thing that we know for sure, there seems to be bipartisan support for something that's better, that's more borrower friendly, that's more permissive. I regularly talk to people that are scared, like, oh, you know, if Donald Trump re-ups, is PSLF going to go away, or questions like that. I always try to reframe the conversation and say, people on both sides of the aisle recognize that student, you know, you just look at that like growth chart, the exponential growth curve of student loans in America, and all politicians realize that it's an issue. So whether it's, you know, Trump-specific proposals or what Biden and Kamala Harris have been saying, which they've gotten some of that from kind of Elizabeth Warren's early ideas when there were more people sort of jockeying for that Democratic nomination, I think that it's a good it's as good of a time as there's ever been to be a federal student loan borrower.
I would say, and tell me if I'm wrong, Travis, but I feel like what I've read and what I've dug into language-wise on some of these proposals lately, or thoughts about the future of student loans, I feel like Republican side wants to simplify. And I feel like the Democrat side wants to improve affordability of payments, maybe, or just improve. Definitely PSLF is a hot topic. Simplification doesn't really mean more affordability in the payments. So that's what I kept like running into. I don't know if that's a general trend that I'm just picking up on that I'm maybe not reading enough, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think Democrats favor simplification too. I think both sides favor simplification. The problem is the simplification looks different,
yeah,
right? So if you're Republicans, you want it to be kind of painful to pay based on your income, particularly if you have a huge balance, because, you know, you want to see the debt paid back. You want the government's role in student loans to be as minimal as possible. Whereas if you're, I think, the Democratic side, you're like, well, I'd like it to just be 10% of income for 20 years with no tax bomb for everybody. You want it to be really generous to graduate student borrowing, because you want people to go on and get further educations. You want people that come from lower income backgrounds to not have as big of a burden, even if they go on to get a big expensive education. I don't know. I think that that's the thing that's kind of like, what was interesting to me is Lamar Alexander, Republican, outgoing leader of the Senate committee that decides these things, he was really pushing hard for a big grand student loan overhaul before it obviously became clear that wasn't going to happen. And he was basically saying, all right, the grand compromise is going to be, you know, repay for graduate school people and then pay for undergraduate school people. That was the big grand Democrat, Republican, bipartisan compromise they wanted to do. And I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think about our clients, right? Like, if he walked back some statements. He said that if you like your current plan, you can keep it. So he did say that, which is really important. But let's say that you couldn't keep it. You know, do you think we'd see a lot of people refinance if they had to include their spouse's income? I know there's obviously some cases that would happen, but how do you think that would affect our clients?
Yeah, I think so. I think we'd either see a lot more refinancing, but I also think we'd literally probably see people get divorced or not get married at all. Because I know people already delay marriage because they don't know how to handle their student loan situation when they are married with student loan debt. Lots of conversations I have with clients start that way. But once they know how to pivot the current system, it's not so bad. And it's probably better than what they thought. But if that wasn't an option to use our current system in the way those plans are built, I don't think people would be legally getting married. I think it would be discouraging people to do that, to pursue forgiveness.
I totally agree. I mean, I've had more than one call where I've actually had the non-indebted significant other like book the call, say like, I care about this person, but I need a qualified professional. Tell me if I can marry them or not. If the ability to exclude spousal income goes away, that's, yeah, I mean, it's sort of funny, but not that funny. Like that's a big deal.
I'm going to promote Rob for a second here. You know, when you book with Rob, you actually get a marital counseling session and a student loan session combined for one low price.
That's my specialty. No, but I was just going to say too, from a mathematical perspective, the debt to income, when it's a lower debt to income, meaning like higher income compared to the debt, refinancing can make a lot more sense. But when you can exclude your spouse's income, then the debt to income for the household is higher, right? So if you have a household with one person in the household has student debt, yeah, I think there would be more refinancing in that case. And there probably should be more refinancing in that case.
That's the scenario to me where Biden wins the White House and Republicans win the Senate. And based on the modeling, at least, if you believe the polling, kind of unlikely scenario, really. The most likely scenario, I think, is probably your marginal victory by the Democrats controlling Congress and the presidency. So let's talk about that scenario. So we talked about the blue wave, which if we have the blue wave, I actually do think you get free public college. I think you get Pell Grant expansion. I think you get the 5% of your income for student loan payments, but I think you probably only get that for undergrads. I don't think they would do it for graduate students at this point. I think that they would just do, you know, keep graduate students at 10% and do undergrads 5%. So I think you, with a blue wave scenario, I do think you get a lot of Biden's student loan plan actually going through.
You think you'd get that $10,000 loan forgiveness too?
If you have a wave, right? But if you don't, which is the most likely scenario, right? The most likely scenario is probably like 52 Senate seats for Democrats. If you'd have that, who are the swing senators? It's like, you know, Dianne Feinstein, Joe Manchin, kind of like these folks that are older maybe or come from more red states or they're more moderate. Like I saw something today, it's kind of unrelated for student loans, but there was an article, I think, in Politico just talking about how some Senate Democrats are the ones standing in the way of expanding the Supreme Court. Because when you do have the power, you do sometimes see people acting in a more institutionalist kind of bent. You know what I mean? Just because by definition, if you have more senators, you've got more senators that are probably moderate, which is why you have the majority. So I'm kind of thinking that if you have like a marginal victory, and I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts about this, but if you have a marginal victory, I think that the 10K cancellation, it's probably going to happen, but I think it would happen only for distressed borrowers. Like I think you'll see the HEROES Act get passed, but I think it's going to be the stripped down HEROES Act from, well, you know, that bill when they said 10,000 canceled for everybody, but then they went back and said, okay, 10,000 canceled only for people below certain income, you know, only for people that have lost their jobs or in default. And one thing I'd like to say too is regardless of your political persuasions, the Democratic student loan plan is more expensive than I think that they've forecast. And so if you have a plan that's more expensive than forecast, there's a lot of competing priorities that are going to happen, you know, if you have a Biden administration, right? I mean, you have early childhood education, getting the economy jumpstarted, testing expenses, you know, healthcare, expanding the ACA, fully funding the ACA. So there's all these competing priorities, and where do student loans stand on the totem pole? My guess is with COVID, they probably are more of an afterthought, which makes me think that you see like tinkering around the edges without massive change if you don't have this sweeping mandate. Like in 2008, I don't know if y'all were paying attention politically, I guess. I was a little college political junkie back then, but they had 60 seats. Isn't that crazy? Like to think about that? Like the Senate Democrats, they had 60 seats. They had like a filibuster proof majority. And I don't think anybody politically, like political, you know, analyzers, right? I don't think anybody's calling for them to have 60 seats this go around. Am I wrong on that?
No, I think that's right. I think maybe it might be a slim Democrat majority, but, you know, like you said, the chances are that's going to be the Republicans could probably hold the Senate. Even if Republicans hold the Senate, Democrats control the House, and we got a Biden administration, then Justin, to your point, you know, we've seen student loan rules get more accommodative to borrowers. So imagine you were in a highly contested Senate race in Georgia or North Carolina or Maine or wherever, and you vote against making student loan payments easier for people in your state. You know, the one thing that sort of like nonpartisan is like student loan hits home. Like without, obviously COVID hits home for everybody. Student loan is probably the next big issue that hits home for the next amount of people. So it has to be something that they'll make a priority. I think if it's in every politician's best interest, if they want to stay elected, to vote on the side of making it more accommodative, no matter if they're a Democrat or a Republican.
Yeah, let's pose this question to you guys. Say the 1 in 10 scenario happens, Trump wins, everybody's shocked, some guy in the New York City subway goes and beats Nate Silver up and he has to get protective custody. you know, because his forecast ended up being wrong for a second time. I'm just joking around here. Actually, one of my favorite Nate Silver stories, if you guys like 538, is like apparently some guy in the New York subway, when he forecasts like Trump having a 20% chance last time and then he won, some New York subway guy was like, "You blew it, Silva. You blew it." So say that happened. And December 31st, like you were saying, Rob, politicians' interest, right, to not have people pay, especially before elections. Do you think that goes away? What do you guys think about how much longer people are going to get to benefit from that payment and interest freeze, depending on what happens in November?
I don't think it goes away. I think there's going to be some kind of extension regardless. I don't think it's going to be generous, as generous as what's been talked about. I don't know. I'm not convinced payments are kicking in January. I'm really not. But I also have nothing else to back that up with.
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, if you look at the numbers, they're starting to surge again, unfortunately. And everyone's talking about how the winter is going to be bad for the numbers. And then there'll be might have to be some shutdowns and people won't be able to afford. And plus, people have already gone through their emergency savings, gone through the PPP money that they got. So they probably will end up extending it again through at least the spring.
Well, and also with just the delay of the second stimulus package. I mean, all of this stuff is like coming. Like, a lot of people think there might be, like you said, a second wave of COVID, and there hasn't been additional relief, and there's no solid relief plans as of right now. Maybe post, you know, the election in November, but that's a month and a half away from when payments are supposed to kick back in. So how much of a relief is that actually if it kicks back in January regardless?
Well, I think it's kind of a no-brainer that if you have Democratic control of Congress and the White House, right, I think the first thing they do is say, we have a mandate to pass the $3.4 trillion stimulus bill that, you know, we're currently debating, right? And maybe they pass it early. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, they're kind of still talking. It's so weird, so hard to follow. Like, I could easily actually see this episode come out, and then suddenly they announce, we have a $2 trillion stimulus agreement. And we're like, oh, shoot. What's in it for student loans? Maybe we need
Believe
to go
that episode.
edit this podcast episode, right? But, it, like, say something modest happens on the stimulus front, which I don't think it's going to be super aggressive, because Senate Republicans are just not going to want to go along with something that's super aggressive right now. So say that you have a modest sort of quote unquote skinny stimulus and Dems win, which is the base case, right? Base case scenario. So they win. And then I think you'll see immediately just literally copy paste, let's pass the stimulus bill, which has September 30th, 2021 as the date that payments and interest began again. You know, what's interesting is I don't think that they probably would extend it. Now, here's my knock on wood. I'll probably eat these words. Who knows? I don't think they extend it past September 30th, 2021. I don't think that happens. They've never really had discussions about it going, the payment interest rate going longer than that. That student loan kind of suspension of payments and interest, I think that they do extend it to that date. Like, I would honestly say I feel kind of like 60-70% chance they extend it to September. Because again, I think that you're not going to go back and like edit that part of the stimulus bill, because nobody knows how much it costs and you don't have to score it, I think, with the same rules as CBO, because it's an asset owned by the government. So it's not like you have to go out and get money to cover the interest that you're not charging, you know, so it's a little bit different with the accounting. So I don't know. I think our readers could feel pretty confident, or listeners could feel pretty confident, that it's going until September of 2021, unless you have a Trump victory, in which case I do think it probably, I think payments do start in January. I don't know.
But then I'm curious too, because we got a big panic announcement that they were going to be changing servicers at the end of this right. year. And then they quickly came back and said, hang on, we're going to start that process, but no one's actually going to move until end of 2021. So does that affect an extension timeline in some way, because they need to process all of that?
That's a great question. So I'm going to pose this one to Justin. Here's a loaded question. So Vice President Biden is a Delaware man through and through. Naviance headquarters is in Delaware. Naviance, one of the servicers that's supposed to get axed. Does the Biden administration change the servicer mix in 2021? He's speechless.
I mean, at that point, he's already kind of got what he wanted. So I guess Yeah, I don't know. I mean, who knows? Yeah.
That's the profound answer, right?
Yeah. The servicer question is an interesting one. The thing I keep coming back to is, from a policy standpoint, like, what's the most effective way to, and this is totally pragmatic and not at all related to kind of the conversation, but is the student loan, like, zero interest, $0 payment approach the best way to be helping people, compared to, you know, if people are on an income-driven plan already and they lost their job, they can pay zero. Maybe we should be looking more at like a something in the universal basic income family rather than the student loan fix that is going to be very imprecise in its impact.
I mean, yeah, like I think that, I mean, it's very clear to me that this policy is like one that benefits our listeners way disproportionately. We have a lot more higher income, higher educated, higher debt folks that listen to our show that hire us for services at Reader Blog. It's a different problem when you owe $100,000 versus if you owe $10,000 and you're in default. And to be honest, like if you look at like inequality in America, like the you could say that student loan borrowers are poorer than people who have a lot of assets, right? So you could say, well, by helping all student loan borrowers, you're reducing inequality. But it's like, well, actually, say you have $100 billion pot of money that you can use on student loan relief. The way we're doing it now certainly does benefit that private practice orthopedic surgeon way more than the frontline healthcare worker that's working in a nursing home. I do think that that's an unfortunate part of the way this policy was designed. It was designed in a hurry, and it was designed without a lot of thought behind it. It was sort of like a panic response. Well, suspend the payments, suspend the interest. And I'm glad that that happened. I'm glad we got some relief. But yeah, certainly I think that if you could do it over again, maybe it'd be better to be more targeted if you're trying to help out people truly struggling. Because I do think that it's definitely true that based on our bookings, professionals by and large are doing okay. You're not seeing the big job losses. You're not seeing the really big layoffs happening. And in a lot of cases, you're not even seeing the same risk of exposure, except for, you know, frontline medical workers are obviously exposed. So let's talk a little bit about the servicer thing. We kind of predicted this. If you kind of remember our conversations internally, like we were saying in October, or I guess August-ish, that there's no way they do this.
Right. I think we were all convinced, like, there's just no way they're going to do all the above in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, it's just too much activity. It's just too much transformation all at once. So I think we do a decent job at saying, like, wait a second, this would involve levitating the Titanic and then beaming it up to the moon and then having Nokia establish a 4G contract to provide telephone service. I'm just joking. That was a news article about Nokia providing 4G on the moon. My brother got really excited because he's Robin Hood day trading, you know, Nokia and Carnival Cruise Lines and everything, right? That's how you know you want to be cautious about your stock portfolios, folks. My brother is like asking Reddit if he should get involved in options. My 25-year-old unemployed actor brother. Hope he's listening. So the servicer stuff probably changes in like late 2021, if it changes at all. And then it probably looks different. If you have a new administration, they'll renegotiate the contracts. Basically, I think, base case, there's a good chance that you don't have to actively do anything about your student loans for people that already have them until like late 2021. I do think that that's a possibility. However, we know that things that we expect often don't go the way we expect. So what are some things that could really upset the apple cart? One thing I'd like to ask you guys about is, what is the first thing that you're going to do when we get a vaccine? Let's ask this question to each one of you, and I'll tell you why I'm asking this question in a second.
After we get it? Or
yeah, let's say we have a vaccine and you've signed up and you've got it, you're fully injected or whatever, the vaccinated, you're fully vaccinated, the antibodies work. You go to a concert in a packed area and you don't catch it, so it seems like it works. I'm just joking around, but what do each of you do when you're vaccinated?
Well, work-wise, I really actually enjoy working from home. So I think going forward, I am going to be more so 100% virtual. But I had a lot of plans for travel. So, and I think that's going to be a common thing that people say, I want to get out of here. I want to get out of my house. So I would like to travel. I just don't know what that would look like. There'd probably be a surge, I would think.
Yeah. What about you guys?
I was going to say travel too. I mean, my wife and I have already talked about maybe we should use our points and book something for 12 months out. Travis, you'll learn this, but there's a difference between a vacation, which is just the two of you, and a trip, which is a family vacation, all of us. We have three kids. They're 10, 8, and 4, and we plan to take a trip with them, but we also want to take a vacation by ourselves, too. We've been in the house. I've been keeping track. So our kids, they're actually going back to school in about a week in person. They've been home for 227 days.
Who's counting?
You know, down to the minute.
Yeah, my wife and I have been working from home. I mean, obviously, we're very fortunate. It's like, it's a great circumstance. It's been a fun 7 or 8 months to, you know, have that extra time. But at the same time, my ears could use a little bit of a break.
For me, so my wife's obviously a physician, and I'm sure I'll be one of the first people in line at CVS, even though if it was me and we're talking about like a brand shiny new vaccine, I'm like, let's let a few people kind of get this thing and we'll sort of see what the studies show. That's just me talking.
The second they have it, light me up. That's my attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess for me, it's like I do have a home office as well. So normally I spend a lot of time working, either traveling for work, doing like the conference circuit in the weird little corner of the world in anesthesiology and pain management that I run around in, or just working from a coffee shop, getting out and about to be able to just get out of my house for from the 9 to 5. And being able to do that again will be something for which I will be deeply grateful when the time comes.
Yeah,
I would say first thing that would be really exciting that includes travel for most of us, well, I guess half of this podcast, but would be to have our student loan planner get together that we planned and we had to cancel because of COVID.
Student loan summit.
Yes.
That's a great point. So for those that don't know, our team is totally remote and there's about 15 to 20 of us. And so I had gone so far as to book airline travel for everybody and we had reserved a spot and we were going to do it. And then COVID happened and I had almost pressed submit on the hotel reservations for the team. Then obviously didn't. And we had to cancel that. So that would be wonderful to have an in-person get together once this thing is finally behind us. Now, the reason I asked the question is one thing I like to think about student loan planner. I like some people accuse me of being like paranoid with from a business perspective, but I like to think about all the risks that we're not thinking about and all the risks for borrowers or listeners that they're not thinking about perhaps. So my big risk for 2021 is inflation. The reason for that is if you look at another time when demand surged all at once after World War II, everybody came home from the war. Suddenly you could spend money on things again, and inflation in 1 year was 20%. And then it got back to normal, and then it was a normal level. But I have no idea how that would impact our borrowers if you had inflation of like 20% in a year. I think that you would have a lot of the refinancing markets totally break down. I think that you would not be able to get a deal on anything. You know, your mortgage rates would be cataclysmically bad. It would be really, really disruptive. And so kind of my kind of X factor for 2021, just something to be aware of, right, is like when people all go to book flights, there's way fewer pilots and airlines and planes that have the capacity to take people places than there were back before this pandemic because of the financial problems. People have had to do layoffs and they've trimmed routes. Same thing with hotels, same thing with houses. You know, people that have those nice houses in the suburbs, like Rob, that he got at a steal in the last financial crisis.
2009, 2010.
I know. So those houses aren't getting put on the market. So you have like supply still constrained. And so then I think you could really see some really serious inflation. On top of that, look at the debt to GDP ratio for the country being over 100% for the first time. And then if you have another big stimulus bill that passes, and then the stimulus effects too are like several months delayed. So the bill passes and then the money starts getting dispersed like several months later. So I could see a situation where you get a vaccine that's effective, you know, everybody gets it. And then the stimulus bill that was intended for the situation that was existing at the time, that's now not as bad, but that money gets spent. And then you see it just a bunch of inflation. So I don't know. So that's kind of my sort of X factor risk of 2020. So there's like the situation where I think that people should act on this. I guess my thought process is if you see news stories about inflation that are mainstream, right? Like New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, like if they start doing news stories about how inflation is becoming a problem or there's like signs of inflation, then I think that people that are benefiting from the 0% interest on their student loans actually might want to consider going ahead and refinancing within 2021. I don't think that there's really any reason to do it before 2021. But once you get into 2021, regardless of who's president, if you start getting into like January, you know, February, March, April, and you start seeing the interest rates tick up, it might be worth it to lock in something really low long term, because I think that this risk of inflation is something that in particular right now, people are undercounting. So I don't know. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
I agree with the sentiment. I put that at a very, very low risk because if we're being honest, you know, 45% of the country or whatever is already living life without any changes.
Yeah.
And then we have another half that's hunkered down. People have been able to save, like the savings rate has gone up. So when savings rate goes back down, because people who are now have the ability to spend will spend, I think there is going to be like a bunch of extra capacity that's going to be able to come on very quickly Whereas like after the World War, you know, we needed to rebuild the capacity plus with globalization. But I do think inflation is a risk with the spending and with everything. But I wouldn't put that as a high probability event, if I'm being honest.
Well, the bond markets certainly don't think it is.
Right. Right. Know, I mean, but, if you look at the 2 year, the 5 year, the 10 year, they're all historically low.
Yeah, I agree with Rob. This is, I guess, an easier position to take, but it's hard to imagine, like, especially from like a consumer confidence standpoint, people have been getting beat up. Fast forward to like February, March, even if we can see a little daylight from the COVID situation, like kind of depends on what the stock market does, but it's hard to imagine us collectively being in a situation where spending is going to drive that. I don't know. It's hard to imagine.
Travis is probably going to be right though.
No, I mean, I really hope I'm not, because that would mean some serious bad things happening, you know, that we haven't seen since the 1970s, right? Like very few people alive now were adults in the 1970s that remember really bad inflation. I guess that's not totally true. Our parents, but you know, a lot of the people making big spending decisions, right, are just totally unaware. Like a lot of times I bring up inflation with some of our clients and discuss like why $100,000 in 20 years is different from $100,000 today. And people get it, but people don't have that same like, oh, of course, kind of realization for people that have lived a long time.
Yeah. I mean, inflation's been like south of 2% on average for most of our adult lives. Anybody who's like approaching 40, it's just been low for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, if you grew up watching Power Rangers, your expectation is prices stay about the same. You don't even notice it. You know, I mean, the price, you know, the gallon of milk is just going to be about what it is. And you're just not, you know, but in 1970s, people were just like, oh my gosh, you know, like their wages were just not keeping up with a massive increase in prices. So I don't know. I mean, that's one kind of X factor that I've been thinking about. I guess that's a bad part of paternity leave, right? Is you have a lot of time on your hands. So your brain just sort of wanders to places that, you know, it's probably very unlikely. But I don't know. It's kind of eerie because I wrote an article for the site, you know, in October of 2019 that was basically entitled like what to do in a severe recession with your student loans. And I had no idea that it was going to happen because of a virus. And that article probably, you know, in the absence of a virus, probably that we wouldn't have had a recession at all. I just like to think kind of contrarian, like with a contrarian bent, so that if something does happen, people can kind of be like, oh yeah, like I know that that doesn't have to derail my wealth plan or my, you know, my savings plan or my spending plans, right? So I don't know, but I do think you're right about, you know, half of the country kind of just doing whatever. We tried to go book like this, like, Smoky Mountain Resort place that's like all outdoors, right? It's like really nice, plenty of space in between people, driving distance, so we didn't have to get in a flight. And it's like booked for like a gazillion months or whatever. I'm just like, oh my gosh. So I don't know.
You could probably book a cruise and help your brother with his stock price.
I guess, you know, honestly, just to show you how wrong I was about this whole thing. Back at the very beginning of this in like early March, it was like March, I want to say 5th. So before the NBA moment, right? And the stock market crash and everything, I booked a cruise for my like elderly parents in November, thinking like, oh, this is definitely going to be behind us by then. And super wrong, right? Super, super wrong. So I don't really know anything. I mean, that's, you know, anybody who says they do is probably being overconfident. I just think that people can be confident in that if you're a professional, the worst of this is probably behind you in terms of the financial problems that people were having, right? If you're a dentist, I do not think that we're going to go back to mass shutdowns across the country like we had. Even if we have local shutdown orders, I think dentists at this point are pretty well set up. You have the PPE, you have the procedures, right? Same thing for a lot of different professionals that we work with. So I don't know.
I did have a dentist say on one of my last consults that he felt, you know, he was really nervous at the very beginning of this, just like everybody. Now he feels like if there's a second wave, he's totally prepared for it, or he feels like his practice is going to withstand the wave, whatever it is. So I thought that was positive, a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think people adapt, right? The people just kind of get used to the new normal and they're ready for whatever happens. And for student loans, for the future of student loans, this is a wonderful time to be opening a brokerage account, filling up your savings, you know, paying down bad debt that you have. terrible time to be speculating in your Robinhood account like my brother. I mean, oh my gosh, like, you know, he's living in a downtown shady Craigslist situation and putting all this money in all these random stocks, and then somebody breaks into his car. And
I was about to say, is this your brother who got his car broken into today?
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's got, and now he's got a $400 bill to fix his window. And I think his, you know, penny weed stock that he bought options on is down like $1,000 or something. I don't know. So it's like, here's a great example, right? If you don't have assets, save, like, have enough money for your, you know, your short-term goals, right? Just have a play money account, that's fine, but you want to try to limit it to 10% of your total assets. That's one thing that it kind of blew me away. So there's a lot of sports going on right now, right? One thing that's really interesting, and I wonder if you guys have any thoughts on this, is they talked about the gambling pandemic right now and how insane, like, I don't know, we've been watching like ESPN and stuff too, and ESPN's like very publicly putting a ton of betting information on every one of their like shows and graphics now. Like, they show you the over under line, they show you like all this like FanDuel stuff. I don't know. Like, and then you obviously have all the, like, you know, the Robinhood, Tesla, crazy speculating stuff going on. Any thoughts about that? Are you seeing that? Did you see that at all with any of our clients?
I just read an article this morning about alcohol consumption during pandemic. I think it's a lot of the same, like people finding outlets that aren't healthy because we're like bored and stuck in our houses and stressed, and there's no, it's difficult to find a constructive outlet for that the way that there has been in the past. So I think that's all kind of an expression of the same challenges.
I was going to add to your sports betting topic where sports cards are coming back really heavy, which, you know, I wasn't really ever in, but like baseball cards, football cards, soccer cards, Pokemon, things are coming back at a rate that's just like crazy, because I think it is, you know, the outlet for people who were able to go to casinos and bet. I'm speculating here, but I think that's just another avenue for entertainment for people, and that market's exploded too.
For sure. No, and just little known facts about me. I actually lived in Las Vegas for 5 months between New York and St. Louis, and I went to casino gaming school, like learning how to deal blackjack and craps.
What?
Nice.
I got a job in St. Louis here before I actually worked as a dealer, but I did spend a lot of time in casinos just kind of like exploring myself psychologically and also like seeing how other people act. And I also used to trade options quite a bit actually when I was younger. And now, again, I'm the senior member, so this is my third recession that I've been investing through. And I can tell you that options and day trading is a really, really good way to lose money, because there's so much great money pouring into it. And gambling too, you know, like, I've sat next to many people who have lost money. I've lost money at times. And so I think we have to find more constructive ways to use. And instead of doing that kind of stuff, kind of like what Travis, you and I had talked about, it's like the longer they go with student loans being payments being paused, the more likely it is for people to find other uses for that money, so that they're spending it, so that when student loan payments turn back on, it's going to be a challenge to come up with that money again to make the payment. So, and that's like what I wrote about in the last week's email blast to the student loan planner email list, was start thinking about that now. Like, yeah, if we have 2 or 3 months before payments are going to be turned back on, see if you can inch back a third of what your prior payment was this month, get another third, and then another third the following month. But I think anyone who has student loans, you know, we got to still keep your eye on the ball, that this is all speculation, and we want to make sure you're inching your way back to being prepared if they do turn payments back on. You know, life is kind of boring at times. Sometimes it's exciting for a lot of professions. There's a lot of people who are really, really having a tough time. And no matter what your circumstance is, it's important to find a nice, you know, healthy, constructive outlet that you can redirect your energy towards improving yourself, improving your relationships in any way you can, and improving your finances for sure.
Yeah, just during this time, I think that you just got to try to think of something that you will look back on this time and think, wow, I used it well. I'm a little bit of a hypocrite because, like, I've read some books during paternity leave that have been great that haven't been related to much of anything. My wife's joke is I read like 10 World War II books and then one book about something useful. You know, I don't know. Just take care of your mental health. Like, this has been such a weird time for everyone. Your student loans are a thing that luckily have been suspended, but they will come back, like Rob said. And I do think that's my main thought about why they do start up student loans in September of 2021 regardless of who wins, simply because I think everybody knows that the longer you suspend them, the more pain and problems that are going to result when you start them up again. And I do think that that's why you will see them start up in 2021. I would be very surprised if they do not. But the good news is it's still something that you can get a plan for, right? It's still something that people are still seeking help on their student loans and just over their overall finances. And that's one thing that I'm really excited that we're able to provide, you know, a source of expert professional help for a few $100 that, you know, you'd have to pay thousands of dollars for and maybe not even get the right answers elsewhere. So with that, thank you so much, everyone. Congrats on our 100th Student Loan Planner podcast episode.
Woo-woo.
And yeah, so I will be back in the office when you hear this. So if you want to send me an email, an insult, a joke, maybe you can share your favorite dad joke. You know, I'll probably be relying on some of our dads on the team for some jokes. So Rob, Justin, you know, send me your best material. But man, I'm looking forward to getting a little bit of clarity about what life's going to look like and hopefully gets back to normal as soon as possible, right?
Yeah, welcome back, Travis, and glad everyone in your family is doing great, and we're just happy to have you.
Definitely. Yes, 100%. Glad to have you back.
Mm-hmm.
Take care, everyone. Remember that you are the main reason that we are all here. We are trying to serve you. So if you have any ideas or, you know, suggestions for a podcast episode, just send us a note, shoot us an email. We'd love to hear what you want to hear about, and thank you for listening.